This is Pablo Mastroianni.
This is Clint Irwin.
This is Dylan Powers.
This is Shane O'Neill.
This is Deshaun Brown.
Soy Vicente Sanchez.
This is Drew Moore, and you're listening to the Rapids Podcast, presented by Dick's Sporting Goods.
Let's go up. Sanchez with a shot across goal, and he's buried that one. As Deshaun Brown races through, and has he got the goal?
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Rapids Podcast presented by Dick's Sporting Goods. I'm David Lindholm here, as always, with Richard Fleming. And we've got a little bit of controversy to discuss this week. We're going to have a little conversation about some of the events on the field this past Saturday and then off it in the last couple days. We're also going to hear from Clint Irwin on some of his writing and then get to the numpty of the week, of course. But Richard, we've had an exciting couple days around the office here as we recapped Saturday's game. I think there wasn't a ton to talk about on the soccer front. It was a 0-0 draw. The Rapids couldn't quite break down San Jose, who was playing very defensively. And so there's, you know, some speculation. Maybe it was good from the Rapids to get a point when they're not playing at their best. I think still frustrating not to get all three. But other than the soccer, there were a couple incidents on the field on Saturday that certainly drew your attention. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you saw from that game on Saturday?
Well, it formed the bulk of my view from the booth, which comes out on a Monday. If it's a Saturday game, comes out on a Monday on the club's website. And it was the what I felt was over-physical approach from Adam John, who got sent off, and rightly so got sent off for that late challenge on Jared Watts. And it was the off-the-ball incident involving Alan Gordon on Shane O'Neill. So those are the two elements that I pulled out, and my take on it was that there is a line, there is a physical element, of course there is, to the sport of soccer, shoulder to shoulder, you know, firm, fair challenges. But I felt that on those occasions, both of those incidents, both of those challenges overstepped the mark, where the safety of the opposing player was put at risk, because we saw both of them. And we, as you know, for those that haven't seen them, that they are on the website coloradorapids.com, the attempt to get the ball off Jared Watts from Adam John was late. It didn't appear that he was even looking at the ball, because he's clattered right into the side of Jared Watts. It looked more like a hockey challenge than a soccer challenge,
which you get suspended for coming across the front of the guy in hockey like that. Now,
yeah, and you could see Jared Watts. It was, you know, sickeningly the sort of the way that his neck snapped sideways, and then Alan Gordon moments before that. Alan Gordon limped off and was replaced by Adam John. Alan Gordon targeted. No other word for it, targeted Shane O'Neill on the edge of the penalty area, trying to create space for himself, but he led with the elbow. And there's no place in the game for that. And, you know, I'm not naive to think that it doesn't happen in the game. Of course it doesn't. It does. And I'm not one to think that it won't happen with players at the Colorado Rapids. But what I'm saying is, on Saturday, a line was overstepped. And on that occasion, I felt that the two players were wearing the colors of San Jose.
So I guess I'm curious, what was it that, was it just that stepped across the line for you? Because I think there have been other physical games. There's certainly been other games that you've covered of the Rapids that have had, multiple incidents that maybe get reviewed by the disciplinary committee. What was it about these specific incidents in this specific game? If it had been a 3-0 game in either team's favor, would you have still been able to sort of spot it that much and look at it that closely?
Maybe not. What stood out for me, particularly the Alan Gordon, and there are a few things that are worse than an off-the-ball elbow on a fellow professional. One of them might be spitting. Spitting is just, because it's just disgusting. But I think an off-the-ball elbow in that kind of situation, and you could see from Shane O'Neill's reaction, fellow professionals normally get up and they're absolutely aware of the rough and tumble of the sport, and there's a bit of a slap on the back and a shake of the hand, and the two players get on with it. Shane O'Neill, as you can see from the video replay, was having none of it. He was not convinced that it was not done with anything but malicious intent. It was an off-the-ball incident to try and create the best possible opportunity for Alan Gordon to run into space without anybody tracking him. And it was a cynical challenge, which could have led to any number of facial injuries. And we've had the situation here with Dylan Powers. We know exactly firsthand, as many clubs will, the danger of concussion. Shane got away lightly. Didn't lose teeth, didn't break a nose, didn't damage an eye socket, fracture a jaw. When you throw an elbow, you are running the risk of any kind of facial injury. So I think that was incredibly dangerous and irresponsible from an experienced player. The other one with Adam John, I know he'd just come on and maybe he was trying to prove a point and maybe he was trying to get into the thick of the action. It was late and it was a strong late hit straight into the side of Jared Watts. And again, right on the touchline, we've seen players take a tumble, crashing into television cameras, into advertising boardings, or into the bench. So again, that was reckless. Yes, he got sent off, and that was the correct decision. Whether the MLS disciplinary committee choose to take any further action, but I would hope they would take some action with Alan Gordon, because that kind of thing, you know, whatever. And I'm not, again, I'm sure there will be incidents concerning the Rapids this season. We had them last season, particularly with surrounding Henry Thomas. These are the elements that we want to try and stamp out. Yes, keep the physical aspect. You know, I'm not one of these guys that say, let the skillful players play and let's not have the physical element. No, because that's part and parcel of the game. But when you overstep that mark, as I think San Jose did at the weekend, then somebody needs to raise the voice and raise the concerns.
Well, I think that there have been concerns raised to your column and to the video that was put on the front page of the website by a lot of San Jose fans who thought that you were overstepping the mark and that you were ignoring some incidents even that involved Rapids players during that game. Edson Buttle getting his elbow in the face of Victor Bernardes, and also Buttle challenging for a ball in the box and taking out the legs of Andreas Gorlitz. And I mean, is that something that you think about or that you see their argument in terms of, you know, calling them out for this type of physical play when not just are the Rapids maybe guilty of that in the past, but even in that same game?
I clearly I see the alternative view, and I see antics and action. I've been covering this game for 25 years. I see most of the stuff that goes on out there. The difference that I would say is that Edson Buttle and Bernardes was a challenge by two big guys going for the same ball at the same time. Now, if you look at that replay, it just so happened that Edson Buttle got his elevated arms. He didn't throw an elbow. He was using his arms as players do to give themselves elevation. He just so happened to get his arm above Bernardes's. Now, Bernardes could have been the other way around. So we could be talking about Bernardes having his arm above Buttle's and above shoulder height, and then it looks worse. Absolutely night and day. Night and day compared with an off-the-ball elbow and a late hit on the sidelines when the ball has already gone. These are two guys going for the same ball at the same time. The Gorlitz incident was clumsy. It wasn't malicious, it was clumsy. Buttle was backing up into the penalty area. The ball came across him and he was clumsy. He swept and he was clumsy. It would have been a foul, no more than that. Maybe on occasions, if it had been that kind of game and Buttle had overstepped the mark on a number of occasions, it may have even been a yellow card. But it is not in the same league. And I think to try and put the incidents surrounding Buttle in the same league as Adam John and Alan Gordon, I think is trying to dilute the severity of those two incidents and trying to group them all in as one. There's not. There is grades of severity. There is grades of incidents. Alan Gordon was up there. Adam John quite rightly saw red and maybe even seen further.
And finally, sort of the last part of this is putting these opinions and these views on our website. I mean, you and I had talked about it before it went up there, and we both thought about, you know, what the repercussions might be and what the reaction might be like. Now, you know, a day or two on from getting that on the website and seeing some of the reaction from around the league and from especially from Rapids fans and Earthquakes fans, what do you think about that sort of the place of a club website in looking at another team's behavior?
I think we're in different territory these days. Clubs have websites. Clubs are creating news. Clubs are part of the news. Clubs are, I think, also have a responsibility to the integrity of the league and the play. I would hope, and I would hope going forward, that I've got a balance, and that if there's an elbow thrown by a Rapids player, that I am equally as outspoken. It just so happened that at the weekend it was San Jose that I felt were overstepping the mark. I've had coaches here that have come to me and felt that my column on a Monday has been too harsh and has overstepped the mark and has been too critical of Rapids performances. I was asked that would be take a step back, look at it with as much of an impartial eye as I can, and I do try to do that. And clearly, you know, I'm not going to get it right every single time, and it's an easy stick with which to beat me with, that I'm being a homer and that I'm only seeing one side. But I think we have a responsibility. Now, is it the responsibility of MLSsoccer.com to do their instant replay with Simon Borg and call out all of these teams? Is it the responsibility of the disciplinary committee? Is it the responsibility of each individual club? Is it the responsibility of local media? Who is going to be reporting this if we're not? Because you look elsewhere, it's not really been highlighted. Those incidents at the weekend, apart from Simon Borg, which comes out 2 or 3 days after the game, those incidents at the weekend have not really got a great deal of publicity. And I think for the integrity of the game, there's women and children and families here watching that. They do not want to be subject to that kind of behaviour on the field. We're trying to portray it as a physical sport, as a dramatic, action-packed sport, but we do not want to step over the line. And I think on that occasion, San Jose have just got to take their medicine.
Well, there it is. Richard Fleming not pulling punches with regards to his view from the booth this week and the video posted on ColoradoRapids.com. Give it a read if you haven't already, and then join one of the number of MLS forums that are discussing this issue as we are trying to keep an eye on it, but also move on. We've got an important game against Seattle this weekend. And I do think, Richard, you may have to, the next time a Rapids player steps over that line, you're probably going to have to mention it in your column. Otherwise, you might have an army of San Jose fans calling you, finding your phone number,
I'm well aware of that, I think, yeah.
This is Clint Irwin, and you're listening to the Rapids Podcast, presented by Dick's Sporting Goods.
So, Richard, now moving from you to another writer who has occasionally written things for ColoradoRapids.com and plenty of other outlets as well, is Clint Irwin, who also has to worry about stepping over that line, finding the right balance between what is appropriate to comment on, who it's appropriate for him to be commenting on. And it's a tough job for a player to also be a writer. Not only is your work going to be scrutinized from a writing standpoint, but from an athlete and a what you're saying standpoint about your teammates, about your the players on other teams. And I mean, what have you seen from Clint's writing that impresses you in terms of how he manages to walk on those tightropes?
And it does impress me. He is a very good writer. Grant Wall came out last week and complimented some of Clint's work, and rightly so. He's an articulate. He's a thinker. He is in a quite a difficult situation because he sees a lot that goes on behind the scenes. Now, as a journalist, that would be absolutely golden. The stuff that goes on in the locker room, on the team bus, on the field, in the tunnel before and after games. But it's how you filter that so that it still comes across as a good read for readers, but it also has that little bit of distance so that you're not alienating the very people that are putting food on your table. So I spoke to Clint earlier this week and just put it to him how he's been getting on with his writing and what he likes about it.
I think it's something to keep me occupied. In college, I was studying sort of political science and philosophy, so a lot of that was pretty writing intensive, and I enjoyed it. I think it was the easiest way for me to communicate my thoughts, and I sort of enjoyed it. Even the assignments that we would get, instead of having tests, we would have to write, a paper or opinion piece. So I sort of enjoyed that a little bit, and it's kind of carried over now into what I have been doing. And I think it's just been sort of reaction to things that happen. There's no like real timetable or assignment or anything. It's just sort of what I felt at the time, and I've put it down on paper.
Is it more about a behind the scenes look? Is that what you're trying to give fans, readers, or is it opinion pieces? Are you mixing it up? Is there a blend?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. I think there's a lot that goes on that people might have misconceptions about, or their perception of it is slightly different than what I see. So a little bit of that is sort of, I guess, peeling back that veil of ignorance, as you might say, and try to clear things up. And I think a lot of it is I wanted to show that athletes are normal people in lots of different ways, with the Richard Sherman piece, to show that he's emotional just like every single one of us. And then with other ones to say, this is a different environment for people to be in, and if they were in this environment, they would probably react the same way. So I think it's just trying to give people a glimpse of, what the emotions are involved in this game and in other games, and then opinion pieces as well, just to try to go through them with a little bit of fine-tooth comb and come out with you know, maybe some clear judgments and elucidate some things for people.
Have you been surprised at the reaction? Have you been surprised that so many people have taken to your writing?
A little bit, yeah. I think I was a little bit surprised just how many people were engaging with it. I guess that's a benefit of having this sort of platform, is that maybe the bar is a little bit lower for athletes, but at the same time, I want to raise that bar. I want people to see athletes as you know, men and women who can think and who can form opinions and who have the ability to express themselves outside of just their own physical abilities. So I think that's something that I want to bring out for people.
Is there a line that you're unable to cross?
It's tough. You know, I've been trying to find that line. I think it's difficult, especially for MLS players. Our paychecks come from MLS. We're here in a stadium owned by Kroenke Sports, and then we represent our families and where we come from and our friends. So there's all these, you know, interests and sort of influences that you have to manage, and it's difficult because it's really hard not to to anger someone. You know, like we were talking about with some of your view in the views of the booth, it's hard not to step on some toes. And I've tried to do my best to stay away from that, because I don't go out to make anyone angry. But at the same time, you have to tell it like it is sometimes.
And that's it, because there is that fine line. And I've found in 25 years of writing that if it's too bland, people are not going to be interested. If you're sensationalist, it's only got a certain shelf life. So you've got to be fair, you've got to be balanced, but you've got to give people something that they want to read. So where do you go from here? Are you going to move? Is this something you'd love to do more long term?
You know, I've thought about it. I think it's something that I'm just exploring at this time. It's hard to say. You know, I enjoy it a little bit, but at the same time, there's parts that I don't enjoy. I don't think I would like to be on a deadline or anything like that. I just enjoy sort of, hey, I'm going to throw this piece out here, and if someone wants to pick it up, they'll pick it up. And I don't really have any pressure to churn out pieces, you know, every week or anything like that. So I've tried to focus a little bit more on the quality over the quantity. But, yeah, it's just a different avenue to explore, and maybe after my career is over, something to look at and an option down the road.
So do teammates look at you? Do they think, what's he thinking? Am I the next one? Or is that one of the areas you just don't cross into? Talking teammates, talking mm-hmm. opposition, talking MLS?
Yeah, I try to do my best not to talk about teammates or other players in this league in a negative light. I think, you know, I write a piece on, you know, sort of behind the scenes, what it's like on the road. Just sort of, you know, playful pieces like that. But I think for me, at least as a player, I don't know if I'm going to have to share a locker room with a guy that I criticize or someone, or play for a coach that maybe, you know, I said something about 5 years ago and someone pulls it up and they say, oh, well, how are they going to get along? So I don't really have any desire to confront that at this point in time. I think, you know, after your career is over, you can be a little bit more outspoken. I think like Alexi Lawless and Taylor Twellman, they're able to speak their minds a little bit more in a public sphere and say, you know, call people out on certain things. And I think that's okay. But I think right now the position I'm in, like where I was talking about those influences, you know, players are one of those other parties that you have to deal with. So I try to stay away from that as much as possible.
That's Rapids goalkeeper Clint Irwin talking about, I'd say, his second job, which is as a writer. And it's funny, we were just talking about how he, a year and change ago, 14, 15 months ago, didn't know if writing was going to be his first career or if he was going to give this goalkeeping thing another shot. And now he's found a way to do both. It's pretty intriguing.
He's got options, and he's created those options. He's created those chances. He's created the opportunities. Yeah, you've got to have a little bit of luck. Of course you do. That goes your way. You need somebody to show faith in you. But Clint, and similar maybe to somebody like Chris Clute, they've been given a second chance, a second opportunity, and they have grasped that, and they are making the most of it. And Clint Irwin, he's such a great guy, such a lovely fella, and a real asset, not just to the Rapids, but to Major League Soccer as well.
You can also follow Clint on Twitter, at Clint Irwin, where he's got many versions of a lot of the essays. He tends to walk the line there, too, talking sometimes about the refereeing that he sees in other matches, talking about sort of issues in sports, and often with a Carolina twist, since that's his home area. He's got some posts on that. So do check him out on Twitter, at Clint Irwin. You can also check out some of his writing on SI.com, Sports Illustrated's website, or on ColoradoRapids.com, though we're going to have to keep working on him to get more out there. I know he doesn't want to work on deadlines, but we've got to try to nudge him to get a little more content on ColoradoRapids.com. Well, now, Richard, I think it's that time again to go into... I'd say one of my favorite moments of the week is finding out your numpty of the week. And often we talk about it before the podcast, but today I have no idea what direction you're going in for this one. You said it might be a little different, so I'm intrigued. Richard, who is this week's numpty of the week?
It is Doug in Fife.
Doug in Fife?
Doug in Fife, which is just outside Edinburgh in Scotland. And I will elaborate. This was
Doug. What have you done this time, Doug in Fife?
He sent in a message to the BBC message board after Manchester United had lost to Everton, David Moyes was sacked. This is what he wrote. Which Manchester United players would get into Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool? Rooney maybe? Van Persie when he turns up? That's it. Man United were supposed to be different. I'm done supporting them. Now, you talk about glory hunters. They have had almost unprecedented success under Sir Alex Ferguson, whose reign lasted for 26 years. They have a blip with David Moyes, and this guy is done with
He's him. Done.
He's done. No longer supporting Manchester United. That is how fickle some fans are. And for me, the numpty element comes from you absolutely stick with them through thick and thin. You stick with them through the sunshine and the showers. That's what makes the fans, the fanatics, the supporters. They are the heartbeat of every club up and down the country, across the land, across the world. And here's a guy, a couple of sorry stages and difficult results. Well, welcome to the rest of the world as far as most soccer fans are concerned, who've not been able to wallow in the glory of Manchester United's and the Barcelona's and the Real Madrid's and the Bayern Munich's. Most soccer fans have up and down seasons, mainly down, where they're just happy to stay in the division that they are currently in, or to maybe have a bit of a cup run. So for me, this maybe does go beyond Doug of Fife.
I would hope so, because poor Doug is getting called out by you.
He's getting absolutely slaughtered.
And he doesn't even know.
He doesn't even know it yet, no. But this goes to the heart of the modern soccer fan.
Wait, we can't go after the modern soccer
fan. I am going to go after some. And it comes back to maybe the internationalization of domestic leagues, where and I have people here saying, who should I support? Which EPL team should I support? It's like, well, I don't know what triggers the following of a team. Why would you follow a team in the first place? And sometimes it's family links, sometimes it's where you're from. And we've moved on. Modern, and this is why I talk about the modern soccer fan, is because we have moved on from when I was growing up and when my father was growing up and when his father, you supported your local team. Your local team might be a second, third or fourth tier, but you supported your local team. And I think where the modern soccer fan element has really taken a different direction. And I've seen it across England, where television has created the monster, because it has brought the Manchester Uniteds to the living rooms of televisions all across the world, and not just all across the world, but in pockets of England where they also have soccer clubs. I remember being at a lower league ground at Hartlepool, covering Hartlepool against Brighton. Hartlepool
also one of the hardest names to pronounce if you're American. I don't think there's anyone who would look at that and say Hartlepool.
Okay.
In America.
Hartlepool.
I think you mean Hartlepool.
Hartlepool. So Hartlepool, which is very close to Sunderland, Middlesbrough and Newcastle. And there was a young lad sat in front of me at a Hartlepool game wearing, at the time he played for Newcastle, wearing a number 9 with Alan Shearer, with Shearer on the back. That to me tells me that the modern soccer fan is everywhere. You can be walking the streets of Rio and see a Liverpool jersey or a Real Madrid jersey. So this idea of this guy being from Scotland, following Manchester United through all of their glory days, and then they have 1, 2, 3 or 4 months, whatever it is, 11 months under David Moyes of struggle, and that's it. He's had it with them.
Okay, but so how then does it work? How does any team have more supporters than any other team? If you get it from your family and that's it, how does a team become more popular? How is it acceptable then to that Manchester United has all these fans, even within Manchester, and other teams don't? Wouldn't there be no way for a team to gain in popularity?
Success, clearly. Success is part of it.
Then everyone's a glory hunter.
But it's then turning you back on the team that you've chosen for the original reasons of being a glory hunter.
So you support two teams then?
No, you support that team that you've chosen, absolutely, through thick and thin. And that's what makes a supporter. That is what, I have one team, but I keep an eye on other teams' results because of... I've covered them down the years as a journalist, but my one team is Chelsea. I follow their results. I follow their progress. They're a team that I'm more likely to get upset about, but that's through my father and through his family and through where they came from in the part of England. So the idea of just chucking away your team because they're not behaving the way that you thought they would. And I'm sure the Rapids fans will join me. They will have a second team, and I'm sure they'll have an EPL team, and they might have a Spanish team. But their MLS team will not change. They would never dream of switching to becoming Houston Dynamo fans or Real Salt Lake fans or even San Jose fans. You pick your team in that league, and you might have a favorite team in the Championship. You might have a favorite team in League One, League Two. But your team in the Premier League, your team in MLS, doesn't change. That is not how it works.
Well, Richard, I would say this then, that it's not the modern fan. It's just that modern technology has allowed you to find this fan. Whereas before, you weren't going to know where Doug in East Fife was, what he was thinking or what he was talking about. But the internet's given him the ability to trash talk Manchester United. And so now you're suddenly connected with this guy. I think these numpties have always existed, and that you're waxing nostalgic for an era that didn't actually exist.
Looking through those misty glasses and my pie and pint in hand, I think... the Premier League is hugely successful, and it has opened the clubs within the Premier League to a vast, vast audience. But I do firmly believe that the connection with which most of us locals would connect with our local club is very different than the way somebody in Malaysia would connect with being an Evertonian, or somebody in Auckland would connect to being a Norwich City fan. It's, oh, I like the jerseys, or I saw them play against Liverpool, or I heard a story, and it's a different kind of connection. And that's my Doug, a bit tongue-in-cheek, numpty, but that is my take on the modern soccer fan. And it's a good and a bad thing, clearly, because it's now a huge international league, is the Premier League. But I think what has changed is that cultural, strong local links that you would get in the olden days, as we say.
Right.
Now it's more about who's more successful, who's got the nice players, who's got the players that I can, you know, have that connection with, whether I'm from Spain and it's a team that's got a number of Spanish players. Chelsea are very popular in Ghana because they had a number of Ghanaian players, and Michael Essien, and obviously Nigeria as well. Big West African following for Arsenal because they had Senegalese, they had Ivorians within their side as well. So it's not because of the culture and the history and the local links that forge that strength. But then I suppose it's an international game now. The players are no longer local. The players are international. So that cultural feel is different. That connection is different. And Doug is maybe just one that has got it this week as numpty of the week. But I'm just maybe opening it up to the soccer fan culture, which has shifted, is not how it was.
Well, there it is. Poor Doug from Fife. If you're listening, we're very, very sorry that you had to be the target of this week's numpty. But I'm actually hoping you just made Doug up and that he's not a real person. Anyway, that's almost it for us on another edition of the Rapids podcast presented by Dick's Sporting Goods. The Rapids take on the Seattle Sounders this Saturday. That's 2 p.m. Mountain Time. Richard and Marcelo Balboa on the call on Altitude live on TV. So be sure to check that one out. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you in a week.
Nicely taken by Torres. We'll have a shot. Oh, what a goal! What a goal!